Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paskatya Deshatarane. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So tonight we will continue with our reading of the Dan Keli Kumudi, which we began last night by reading the Nandi Shlokas, or the introductory verses to the play. Maharaj, do you know a very nice prayer invocation to Srila Rupa Goswami that we could say and hear before we begin?
Krishna. The prayer says, when will I be empowered with the mission of Srila Rupa Goswami in the service of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam.
So I would like to begin by reading a quote from Srila Prabhupada, and then we will begin the drama. Srila Prabhupada says that Nitya Leela means the pastimes or the loving exchanges between Radha and Krishna, and that is eternal. It is not temporary. We should not think that Radha and Krishna's pastimes, their loving affairs, are just like the business of a boy or a girl as we see in the material world. Such loving affairs in the material world are not at all eternal. Also, they are not actually loving affairs. They are lusty affairs, and therefore they break. Today I am in love with somebody, and the next day it breaks. But Radha and Krishna is not like that. It is eternal. Therefore, that is transcendental, and this is temporary. So simply one who is absorbed in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, he can immediately understand what is the actual position of loving affairs of Radha Krishna. Nitya Leela Tare Spure Se Yaya Radha Madhav Se Yaya Brajendra Suta Pas. And simply by doing that, he becomes eligible to enter into the abode of Krishna. Brajendra Suta. Brajendra Suta means the son of Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan. He who understands about Lord Chaitanya and then about Radha and Krishna's pastimes, he is sure to get association with Krishna in his next birth. So this is Srila Prabhupada's assurance to us that we should continue in our endeavor to develop an understanding of what are the beautiful pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So before we begin, I would like to explain that this particular drama takes place by the side of Nandishwar Hill, because that is where Srila Rupa Goswami was living, residing at Tir Kadamba. But of course, this beautiful pastime takes place on the side of Govardhan Hill. And if you have already noticed, which I'm sure you have, we are all now sitting by the side of Govardhan Hill. So if we could just imagine that this wall here was no longer there, and we were sitting right beside Giriraj, and instead of this being an electric light shining on the deities, it was the beautiful silvery moonlight shining on the atmosphere by the side of Giriraj. And we were all sitting right there by Giriraj, listening to this beautiful pastime. So the Nandi Shloka. When Madhava stood in front of Srimati Radharani and blocked her way, she squinted and teardrops overlaid her stamen-like eyelashes. At the same time, her eyes, dazzling with a concealed smile, overflowed with loving desire. Those eyes, which are pinkish on their border, looked sideways and were most charming, slightly revealing the bouquet of her Kila Kinchita bhav. May Srimati Radharani's eyes bestow the wealth of prem upon you. All glories to Radha's love for Krishna, the enemy of the Mura demon. Although it is all-pervading, it tends to increase at every moment. Although it is important, it is devoid of pride. And although it is pure, it is always beset with duplicity. Now, the person who is speaking right now is called the Sutradhar. Sutra means, of course, the essence. So the Sutradhara, he holds the essence of the drama in his beautiful words. And he summarizes everything into his Nandi Shlokas. He introduces the play with the help of an assistant. And he sets the scene and the mood for what we are about to see. Having completed singing these two Nandi Shlokas, the Sutradhara says, "Enough of this elaborate glorification. Just see the devotees." He is now going to introduce his audience. "Just see the devotees. Their ecstatic emotions inflamed by the moonlight of my Nandi verses. They are now overcome with love by the side of Nandishwar Hill." One devotee is dancing. His hair is standing on end. Another is stunned and he is pale. While another one is running here and there, roaring loudly. And another one has fallen to the ground, senseless. What is this ecstatic state that has overcome these self-controlled devotees as they hear the pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna? I understand. The reason for this transcendental madness is that they are all tasting the intoxicating beverage of intense love for Sri Krishna. The ocean is deep and unsurpassable. Yet although the ocean never crosses its natural boundaries, it cannot remain still during the presence of the full moon. Similarly, these devotees who are grave and unfathomable and respect the boundaries of proper conduct cannot check their feelings when love for Krishna arises in their hearts. Krishna's uncommonly playful pastimes are more beautiful than anything else in the world. Now this sutradhara will introduce a little of the play itself. He says, the joking dispute that took place between Sri Krishna and Radha during the toll collecting pastime is full of transcendental love. When this dispute enters the ears of swan-like souls, it prevents them from tasting anything else. The actor enters the stage and says, now describing the play as well, he says, its seven elements very strong, its text embellished in two different ways, its plot avoiding many twists. This exquisite play shines like the glory of a great empire. The sutradhara sees the actor has entered the stage and he says, O expert actor who has reached the limit of learning, you know very well that on the order of my friends, I am about to stage this small one-act play entitled Dan Keli Komuti. Therefore, I shall now invoke auspiciousness for this endeavor by remembering my master. So the sutradhara folds his hands and he says, all glories to that eternal Lord, whose handsome form is a festival of bliss. His holy names attract those who know how to relish sweetness, and his glorious qualities delight the heart of Nanda Maharaj. The actor looks around at the audience and he says, Master, just see, because of your beautiful invocation, all the devotees are now stunned like deers. They are not even conscious of their own bodies. Sutradhara says, yes. Filled with delicate poetry, beginning with the Nandi shlokas, and sung with graceful musical ornamentation, will not this play bring joy to the foremost connoisseurs of ras? Now, this particular verse has a double meaning, and embedded in this verse are three words: Nandi Mukhi, Gandavika, Radhika, and Lalita. So a voice from behind the stage, from behind off stage, says very loudly, well said, my dear sutradhara, you speak the truth. For today Nandi Mukhi has brought long-lasting happiness to King Nanda's son, Sri Krishna, the best connoisseur of ras, by relating to him news of Srimati Radharani. So the voice off stage reveals another meaning. The sutradhara is describing the play, but the voice off stage is describing the nature of what is about to take place, that Nandi Mukhi has brought Krishna some very, very delightful news by telling him that about the pastime of Srimati Radharani. Sutradhara says, is that not the forest goddess Vrinda coming here along with Subal? Let us leave now and we will prepare the actors for the play. So the sutradhara, he now leaves the stage along with the actor. And from the other side, Vrinda Devi walks in along with Subal. So Subal, of course, is one of Krishna's most intimate friends, and he's particularly expert at bringing together Radha and Krishna for their meetings. So Vrinda says to Subal, "Well said, my dear Sutradhar, you speak the truth. Today Nandimukhi has brought long-lasting happiness to King Nanda's son, the best connoisseur of ras, by relating to him news of Gandharvika Srimati Radharani." "Subal," she says, "Subal, why does this auspicious news not light up your face?" Subal says, "Oh, Vrinda, I don't know anything of this incident with Nandimukhi. Please, tell me what is happening." Vrinda: "Today, Radha, beautifully surrounded by her friends, will pass nearby here on her way to the sacrificial arena at Govindakund. With the permission of her elders, she is going there to sell fresh ghee. On the order of Purnamasi, Nandamukhi has gone and told Krishna about this." Subal says, "Vrinda, how could this most charming girl, Radhika, be allowed by her elders to perform this low-class work of selling ghee?" Vrinda: "On the day of this particular sacrifice, much fresh ghee is needed to offer to the fire, and so the young cowherd girls must bring it. Whoever does so, the sages have declared, will obtain whatever they desire. Such is the standard that is being followed for this occasion." Subal: "Who is the great personality who is arranging this?" Vrinda: "He is known by the auspicious name of Anaka Dandubi." Subal: "Why did he leave Mathura to perform his sacrifice here in the middle of the Vrindavan forest?" Vrinda: "How can any sacrifice be performed in Mathura as long as wretched King Kamsa is alive? By appointing a representative named Bhagari Muni, this sacrifice will be held on his behalf." Subal: "This is obviously meant to cast an evil spell on someone." Vrinda: No, not at all. Not at all. No. This sacrifice is meant to bring auspiciousness and counteract everything undesirable to Vasudev's son, Baladev, and also for the son of Vasudev's friend, Nanda, who is even more dear to Vasudev than his own son." Subal is thinking for a while about this news that the girls are going to come today with their pots of ghee, and he says, "For a very long time, I know my dear friend Krishna has cherished the desire to enact a pastime of collecting taxes from Radhika and the other girls. Today, pretending to be a tax collector, he will thus fulfill his desire." Vrinda: "Subal, this pastime of Krishna collecting taxes is very, very dear to devotees like myself. So let us now make our way down to Manasaganga So they both start walking very quickly towards Manasiganga. And as they're walking, they're listening. And Subal is looking over Manasiganga as Vrinda and Subal are walking. And he says to Vrinda, "Vrinda, do you hear the sound of the peaceful swans warbling on the other side of the river?" Vrinda says, "That is not swans warbling. That is the tinkling of gopis' ankle bells." And she looks very carefully where she is hearing this beautiful sound. And she says, you see how smiling Radha slowly walks along the bank of Manasiganga? She has carefully placed upon her head a golden pot of ghee atop a coiled red cloth which adorns her head. And her girlfriends, each with their own golden pot, are walking closely encircling her. Subal looks at Radha and the other gopis and he says, "How beautiful. The Vrindavan forest looks like a cluster of dark clouds bedecked with the slender vine-like rainbow, Sri Radha, and illuminated by lightning flashes, which are her friends." Vrinda says, "I consider it impudent to try and describe Radha's beauty. Who is it in this world who is fit to glorify her?" And then Vrinda says to Subal, "Subal, if somebody says to you that Radha is as beautiful as a lotus flower, or if they say Radha is as beautiful as the full moon, would this be a compliment?" And Vrinda says, "No. If you were to bring 1,000,000 full moons and you brought 1,000,000 pure, perfect lotus flowers, 1,000,000, their pride upon being beautiful would be crushed to powder in front of the beauty of Srimati Radharani." So Subal and Vrinda are meditating on the beauty of Radha and the gopis. Then Vrinda says, "Subal, you should go and bring Krishna, because he is up on the Sham Mandap atop Govardhan Hill. Bring him to this place. And meanwhile, I will go and see how the gopis are passing their time, and then I will return." So she disappears, and Subal disappears, and Radha and her gopi friends enter onto the stage. They're chatting and walking with their golden pots on their heads. Radha says, "This forest is so beautiful. Look. Look. These groves are marked with many footprints, decorated with a flag, a thunderbolt, elephant gold, and a lotus. And just see how these flower buds have been pressed with nail marks. There is something here that makes my heart both happy and fearful at the same time." Lalita says, "Vishakha, look. hearing the vibration of the flute, all the animals have become stunned, their minds deeply absorbed in trance. Radha says to herself, I hope that Krishna will unexpectedly appear here today and block our way as we carry these pots of sacrificial ghee. Then audibly she says, Hey Lalite, what did Purnamasi say to you with a slight smile when we were leaving? Lalita said, She said, I see that today you will all obtain something extraordinary. Lalita says, Oh. Then she thinks for a moment and she says, When next we have a chance to speak with her, let's ask Noble Purnamasi a question. Lalita says, What shall we ask her? Radha says, What kind of severe vows did persons like Nandimukhi observe in their previous birth? Lalita, why have you concluded that she observed severe vows? Radha, oh foolish one, can you not see for yourself? She constantly, without any hindrance, drinks with the bees of her eyes the exquisite nectar of his face, illuminated by the rays of light emanating from his gracefully swinging shark-shaped earrings. Even the fragrance of such nectar, girls like you can rarely experience even in dreams. You girls smolder in the chaff of not obtaining your most cherished object. Therefore, I say it would be proper for you to perform severe vows in order to achieve the position of girls like Nandimukhi in your next life. Vishaka says, Radhe, I see only one girl who has observed thousands of severe vows and is therefore supremely fortunate. That girl is much, much more fortunate than Nandimukhi or anyone else in Gokul. And Radha says, Oh, Vishaka, who is that crest jewel of pious girls? Lalita says quietly to herself, Is there any other such girl than yourself? But Radha thinks, and she thinks, and she says in her transcendental ecstatic state, she says, Oh, friend, yes, now I understand. Yes, yes, I understand. You speak the truth. This Murali flute, who is intoxicated by the sweetness of the honey of Lord Hari's lips, agitates Gokul with her sweet, deep sounds. She, because the Murali flute is female, the other flutes are male. So she, this Murali flute, who is tasting the nectar of Krishna's lips as he is playing a beautiful flute tune. She alone, and no other girl, says Radha, she alone is distinguished. Lalita smiles and says, Sakhi, that brownish yellow Murli flute. It simply agitates people's minds with its trilling sound. And Radha looks at her and says, Sakhi, why do you smile? It is only due to the mercy of her friends that this unfortunate girl has seen Krishna once or twice. And even then, his intoxicating charm stirred up in her heart and made her forget everything. The gopis all smile at Radha, and then they laugh a little at her. And Radha says, why are you teasing me? Then she says, we must all perform austerities and take birth as bamboo reeds. That is the best birth of all. That sweet Murli, as a result of all her austerities, now relishes the bimba fruit lips of Murari. Now Vrinda sees the gopis laughing and chatting and talking as they're walking along. And so she enters the scene, she comes onto the stage and joins them. Vrinda says, oh, Lalite, Lalite, immersed in conversation, you girls have become bewildered. Did you not notice that now you are climbing the platform to Indra's flagpole? This is a particular place near Govardhan Hill. And they all turn and look back and they realize, oh yes, we've been talking and talking and talking and we've lost our way. So the gopis say, oh yes, Vrinda, dear Vrinda, thank you, you speak the truth. Govardhan Hill is now far behind us. We will all turn south and follow the pathway to Govindakund. So they turn south and they begin to walk. And Vrinda says an aside to Champakalata, who's one of the four gopis who are accompanying Radha. There is Champakalata, Chitra, Lalita, and Vishaka. These four gopis are on either side and behind Radha as they're walking, with their beautiful golden pots on their heads. So Vrinda says to Champakalata, she says, Champak, Lord Brahma extracted the essence of sweetness from all Krishna's beloveds and placed it in one girl. Now, Krishna has abandoned the desire for any other gopi and he rejoices in Radha alone. Radha is looking to the left, looking to the right, and she says, how sweetly the bees are humming in the clusters of lotuses on Manasi Ganga. And Vrinda says to the girls in a joking way, she says, girls, look, can you see that one very intoxicated bumblebee between the lotuses? The lower part of his body glistens with yellow pollen, hovering around again and again. He arrogantly obstructs the pathway of the beautiful female bees. He sports, shaking his head and buzzing very loudly. Now Vrinda is giving a little hint to what the girls are about to experience. So Radha says to herself, definitely Vrinda has something on her mind. Oh, Vrinda, these bees that sport with their beloveds on the lotus flowers are very, very fortunate. And we are unfortunate. We find it very difficult to see our beloved even for a second from very far away. Lalita says, hey, Radhe, why do you look a little bit bent over? As Radha is walking, of course, when you're carrying a pot, you can't bend over. But Radha is looking a little bit weary. So Vrinda says, Sakhi, your body is so soft, like fresh ghee, and now it is trembling due to the weight of this heavy pot that you're carrying. It is suitable only for, your head is suitable only for jasmine flower ornaments. So kindly do me the favor and place your pot on my head. And Radha says, O Vrinda, it is not the pot that weighs me down. It is the burden of all this heavy jewelry that Lalita has forced me to wear, even though I forbade her. So this is, of course, Lalita is thinking that, oh, Krishna is going to come, and Radha should be very nicely decorated. But Vishakha is thinking that Radharani's ornaments are decorated by being on her beautiful body. So Vishakha says, Radha, stand still for a moment so I can remove all that jewelry. And so she very carefully takes off her bangles and takes off her jewelry and takes off her ornaments on her head. So she's hardly wearing any jewelry at all. And Vrinda says to Lalita, Lalita, Padma is put to shame by seeing Radha even undecorated. Therefore, there is no need to take the trouble for her to wear so many ornaments. Radha laughs and says, Oh, Vrinda, I've heard that in the sacrifice we're going to attend, all the young girls who bring fresh ghee are going to be rewarded with a host of ornaments to decorate their whole bodies. Vrinda says, Not only will they be given ornaments, they will also receive the fulfillment of all their desires. Therefore, stand now with folded hands and honor the wish-fulfilling places of Giriraj, for it is they who will fulfill all our desires. So all the gopis stop and they fold their hands and they offer prayers to Giriraj. We're so fortunate we're sitting right beside Giriraj at this beautiful, auspicious time. And they offer all their prayers. And while they're offering their prayers, Champakalata says, Chitra, this southern bank of Giriraj is so beautiful. It's adorned with the lake of Lord Brahma, who is the artist who created all living beings as if they were clay pots. And in this place dwells Lord Narayan, known as Haridev, and he's very affectionate to his devotees. Vrinda says, Just see, my friend, although Giriraj is equal to Anantashesh in holding up the earth and having many heads, ultimately he is far superior to Anantashesh, because on his lap, on his head, and in his belly, Sri Krishna conducts astonishing pastimes. So this is the glory of Giriraj. Krishna conducts astonishing pastimes all over his body. So then Lalita says, My dear golden complexion friend, look at that huge rocky slab on Giriraj where once the best of artists drew decorations on your body. And Champaka says, Lalita, do you see that splendid cloud with rows of flying swans atop it and dancing lightning flashes below? It makes this Sham Mandap on top of Giriraj appear most magnificent. Now, they're looking at Giriraj and they see this extraordinary dark cloud with white birds flying and a lightning-colored aura below. And Lalita says, Champak, that isn't a cloud. Look again. That is Krishna in his yellow dhoti with his swinging pearl necklace. Now, the tree of our desire is about to bear fruit. Radha also sees Krishna. And she looks at Vrinda and she says, Vrinda, who is that well-wisher of my eyes who now rises like the moon before us? This moon-like person, an ocean of nectar for the lotuses of everyone's eyes, now stands on the summit of Govardhan Hill, spreading his golden effulgence and dissipating the darkness of my sobriety. Vrinda says, listen, Radhe, he who is the crest jewel of all those who know how to taste nectar is now manifest before us. Radha says, many times Krishna has walked on the pathway of my eyes, but I have never seen such sweetness as this before. Krishna enters the stage. He's with Nandi Mukhi, who is the granddaughter of Purnamasi, who brought the message to come. And he's surrounded by Madhu Mangal, Subal, and other cowherd boyfriends. And when Krishna enters onto the stage, he looks at Srimati Radharani and says, who is this lovely girl? Can this be my beloved? Can this be the bird who resides in the nest of my heart? Well done, Nandi Mukhi. Well done. I have now found my Radha, who is graceful and artistic, whose charming words decorate my ears, and who is like a veena that creates various sweet notes in different ragas. Nandi Mukhi says, my lord, I will now quickly hide. And so she goes off stage because she doesn't want the gopis to know that she was instrumental in this meeting. So she leaves and Krishna tells his friends to put on a good show. Krishna says, because now he's setting up his toll station, he's going to tax these girls for their milk products. He's got his friends with him. He's very bold. And he sets up his toll station and he tells the boys what they should do. Now he's feeling very confident. He says, my dear friends, blow your horn loudly, sound your bugles, and beat drums and play other instruments, and boldly announce my authority to collect taxes at my toll station. And I will place my bimba fruit lips to my flute. Oh my goodness. When Krishna places his lips to his flute, everything becomes altered. Vrinda looks at the girls who was standing with her and says, how is it that these girls have now become stunned and they're clinging to trees having heard the sound of Krishna's flute? This sweet sound makes the trees blossom with flowers and its thunder silences the cuckoos. The Brahmins also stop chanting their Vedic mantras. The sound of Krishna's flute is like a playful breeze that fans the flames of love in the moon-faced gopis' hearts. And it is like a thunderbolt that shatters the composure of Srimati Radharani. Krishna smiles and looks at the gopis who were now stunned and shedding tears. And he says, Radha's lotus mouth yearns to make friendship with expert joking words. Her two eyes yearned for the companionship of crooked glances. Her two beautiful feet yearned to make friendship with slow and graceful steps. In Radha's body, everything yearns to make friendship with the splendor of youth. Radha is listening to the sound of Krishna's flute, and she says, trying to conceal her emotions, the bumblebee eyes of every girl lick the graceful splendor of his lotus-like form, and the waves of his pastimes eclipse even the playful dancing of graceful young elephants. This cunning, crooked person who stays in the forest by this hill has devoured my steadiness and my peace. Lalita, looking at Krishna, says, Hey Radhe, the master of a bold gang of thieves now descends. Let us continue to walk as if we haven't seen him. So walking very carefully on, all the girls, except Radha, act as if they have no idea that Krishna has appeared and set up his wonderful toll station. So they just keep walking and chatting to each other. But Radha is a little taken by Krishna's presence. And she says, slowly, Sakhi, slowly, slowly, we should walk slowly. You see this crooked hill, it's strewn with so many rocks. So she's walking as carefully as she can, and with her sidelong glance, she's trying to look back towards Krishna. Krishna is watching as these girls walk on as if they didn't see him. And he says, boys, suckers, these girls just disregarded us. How dare they just keep walking playfully along, loudly jingling their ankle bells and chatting. Subal, go quickly ahead with Arjuna and turn them back. So the two boys run behind the girls and they try to overtake them. And Subal says, aha, aha, you arrogant girls, you're eager to sell your butter. You have ignored the toll collector and you willfully proceeded on. Now turn back immediately. The gopis completely ignore him and they just keep walking with complete disdain. And Subal shouts a little louder as he's running along and he says, do not ruin your good reputations. Return back at once. And all the gopis together turn and look at Subal and they say, foolish slanderers, why should we turn back because of you? Subal says, touch your head to the ground. Immediately pay homage to the king of tax collectors. Vishaka says, Subal, why would we not honor the son of great King Nanda? Why? Only because we have taken a vow. And our vow is to bring this ghee to an extraordinary sacrifice. And Purnamasi has forbidden us to show honor to anyone except a Brahmana. Arjuna laughs very loudly and he says, Vishakha, our king of toll collectors, he has also taken a vow. He is also following a vow. So it is not wrong for one vow taker, one vow follower, to offer their respects to another vow follower. Lalita says, what is his vow? Krishna walks in. He doesn't want anyone else to answer this question. And he very proudly presents himself to the girls and he smiles and says, my vow is to daily give clothing to 100 million poor brahmanas. Lalita says, oh, that is your vow? Then your post as a toll gate authority is very suitable. For it would be very hard to keep your great vow without assuming such a high rank. Then, laughing and looking ahead, Krishna says, my dear friend Madhu Mangal, look. Although she is surrounded by her five companions, Radha has become completely motionless. Out of fear, her eyes are almost closed, as if she were a painted statue. Then Madhu Mangal comes over and he pretends to whisper something in Krishna's ear. And then he speaks openly and he says, my dear friend, you are blessed with good fortune. For although Radha is surrounded by her proud girlfriends, she herself is completely frightened. Vrinda looks at Krishna and says, O best amongst males, your chest is broad and hard. Your waist is like a lion's waist. Your arms are like snakes. And your eyes are like tiger's eyes. You are like a wild elephant pretending to be a man. So, why would Radha not look at you with frightened eyes? Radha is frightened, but Lalita is there. Lalita steps forward and she says, the word fear never enters the ears of the gopis who are protected by Lalita. And anyway, what does the word fear have to do with us? For our Prince of Braj, he is standing here before us, and he has taken a vow to always protect the people of Gokul. So how could we be frightened? Krishna listens to Lalita, who is trying to flatteringly tell Krishna they are not afraid of him, even though he's looking so bold. And Krishna says, O decorated Lalita, you have spoken very eloquently. But now, kindly take a seat with all your friends on this white slab. And we shall consider what is the right thing for you all to do. In this way, Krishna suggests that all the girls should now sit down and discuss the nature of the tax that he wishes them to pay. So this is the end of our first section of the Dan Kelly Kumudi, and we will hear the second section tomorrow night. Thank you.